It is the month of January. January is a great month for a lot of people because it means new starts and snowy weather and a lot of quitting.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith Podcast for January 2025. I am your host, Jonathan Buchan, and I am joined once again in this new year by the Reverend himself, Mr. Tim Nelson. Timmy, how you doing, man? How's the new year treating you?
I am doing all right. The new year's good. It's a very snowy new year here in Kansas City. We had like record snow, which for our Milwaukee means nothing. But for us, we just can't handle it.
Yeah, everyone got blasted with the snow. And then poor California is drowning in fire. It's just such a crazy time.
So it's possible that my childhood home burned down.
Did it really? I mean, it's nuts out there right now. Like, I mean, you have famous actors that are fleeing from the fire. Mark Hamill has evacuated his home. It is going up in flames. It's crazy.
Is Mark Hamill in the famous actor category still?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think once you do something like Star Wars, you're it forever. I don't know.
All right.
It's terrible, man. It's awful. Like, I feel terrible for everyone up there, and they still can't contain it. Like, it's out of control, and... Yeah.
I want to tell you something about it.
Yeah.
There is a stand in Altadena, California of deodar cedars, which are from the Himalayas originally. Beautiful giant cedar trees. And they call it Christmas Tree Lane because they illuminated them at the turn of the last century with incandescent bulbs, like when incandescent bulbs had come out. And the whole place has big old light bulbs on it. It burned down.
It did.
Those trees are like over 100 years old, man.
It's terrible. This is your home base. You grew up there.
I am the Tim. I speak for the trees.
Nice. Well, here we are, a new year. So to bring our listeners up to speed, we are still talking about 2024 as we do around this time because... all the big awards 2024 movies are still working their way to theaters. And so we are still talking about that, and we will do that this month and next month. And then it will culminate in the Oscars in March. I think it takes place the first Sunday of March. And then we will be done with 2024. That'll wrap it up. We'll take a break, and we'll be back with 2025 stuff in April. So that's the plan. If you're new, you're wondering why we're still talking about last year, that's just the movie season. If you're nerds like us, so there you go.
Yeah, it's like liturgical time here.
Yeah, exactly right. We're on a different calendar.
There are seasons, okay? And like Christmas for John is March.
Yeah, it's true.
And leading up to Christmas, like Advent would be like February and part of January.
Mm-hmm. The Super Bowl isn't in February, it's in March. Exactly. Yeah, you understand.
I understand. So basically, this is John's busiest time of the movie year.
It's true. It's true. And it's the most wonderful time of the year because it's like you just one great movie after another. Boom, boom, boom. It's so fun. I love it.
It's a good time to go inside of a dark theater. Because what are you going to do? I mean, it's freezing outside.
Freezing. Yes. So, Tim, before we get to our 2024 movie, we have to begin with... highlight of the podcast every time, which is what have we been watching. Now last time you were watching show about people destroying their families for gold and lots of John Candy films. So what are you watching these days?
I'm real lowbrow, John.
I love it.
Well, let's take a look. I have been falling asleep to some shows, John.
Nice. Yeah, of course.
Called Mysteries at the Museum.
Oh, that sounds like a fall asleep show for sure. Yeah.
So they go to different museums around the world, and then they go, this thing was an artifact from here. And then they like act like nobody knows what it is. And then you're like, oh, what is it? What is it?
Oh, my
and
God.
And by the time you're going to find out what it is, you just fall asleep.
I'm falling asleep right now. That sounds great. It's perfect.
You're all, this at Battle Axe came from a hill in Nottingham, England.
Uh-huh. No, I can hear the music and the close-ups, and oh gosh, that's going to be wonderful.
Oh man, it's like the best sleeping show there is. I should just, John, I'm beginning to think I should just start my own sleeping show podcast.
You always talk about it, and I think this is a hidden genre that doesn't get enough attention. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's important.
It needs to be just boring enough, but not too boring.
Right.
And not too interesting.
Yes, but not terrible. Like, it's just a very fine line.
It is a fine line. I've just been, man, I don't know if other listeners feel this way, but I have been struggling to like finish a movie lately. Mm-hmm. Like I'll start something and I'll be like, this is crap, or I'm not in the mood for this. So I've been really like kind of dancing around finishing a movie. I know what I watched in the theater recently.
What's
which
that?
I will do a miniature review of, since we will not review it. I watched Moana 2.
Ah.
Did you see it?
I haven't seen it, but I bet some listeners have. And we don't talk about movies like that enough. So please give us your little plug. Go.
I'm going to give you a very short review. Moana 2, it was number 2.
No. Oh, no. That's sad.
It was because, all right, the original one, you have, what is it? Miranda?
Lin-Manuel Miranda. Great songs.
Yeah. It's like engaging, fun, funny. This one has no Lin-Manuel Miranda. And then it has like a bizarre plot, and I don't understand the plot devices. Like, what? I just didn't get it. And now it has The Rock in it and everything, so that's great. But it didn't have any, it wasn't funny. And I think mm-hmm. that's the biggest problem, because you've got to have it like work for parents. It was not working for me at all. So anyway, I would highly discourage you from seeing Moana 2 unless you've got to just keep some kids busy for a while. But not a movie for adult and kids, because it's just not funny enough for adults. The first one is brilliant. It's a gem.
Agree. Yeah.
The second one just it lags.
That's so sad. What would your letter grade be of that?
C.
C. Okay.
Because of high production value, all that, but lousy songs. And because like in the first one, you come out singing.
Yeah,
this one,
definitely.
The kids couldn't remember any of the songs.
Not catchy. I know. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what you get when you throw Lin-Manuel Miranda out of it. Or maybe he looked at the script and was like, no, thanks. I'm busy that whole year.
Yeah. He was like, oh, number 2. That's what's going on here.
All right. Well, for me, I am currently watching 2 shows. I've got 2 more episodes left of them, so I'm excited. This weekend will be my finale weekend. But the first one is Squid Game Season 2. And I did talk about Squid Game Season 1, I think, before. You've heard, you know what this is about, right, Tim?
Yes.
Okay. I think from the outside looking in, people think like gratuitous violence or whatever. There really is a point, and it isn't like glorifying violence, though there is a lot of violence in it, but it is entertaining in a way for me, especially as a, you know, a Enneagram 6. I'm always thinking worst case scenarios about everything, and so like,
oh, nice.
You really can't get more worst case scenario than death being the consequence of, you know, failing a game. And that's what the show is like, they get these contestants who are down on their luck, and then they don't tell them that this is the stakes. They find out on the first game, but they start playing these children's games, and then they realize that if they lose, they will be killed. And that's scary. And so, yeah, every moment of the show is kind of like has the highest stakes possible, which is why it works. But yeah, really good. I think the second season is even better than the first. Honestly, they did some of the online criticism has been like weird to me. They've been doubting it, but I've found it way better than the first. Even like they've reconstructed the whole thing while still retaining everything that worked about the first season. So highly recommend Squid Game Season 2 if that's your thing.
Well, that's good. I know you're good at recommending stuff that I don't know, and I'm super thankful that you bring certain things into my life.
Yeah, you should check it out. It's on Netflix.
I will.
So, second show I'm watching is on Apple TV Plus, and it is called Disclaimer. This show was written for the screen and directed by, guess who, Tim? Alfonso Cuarón. You remember
him? I need to watch this. Yeah.
I'm telling you. It's on Apple TV. It's Alfonso Cuarón. What was the last movie he did that we loved? Roma, I think, was that one. Roma.
Which should have won Best Picture.
It should have, yeah.
But it won Best International Feature or something, right? Whatever that category is. Which is some crap, because that's that's the best movie that year.
It was great.
Grumpy. Still grumpy. Why do they got to diss the Mexican directors, man?
Totally. I know. Iñárritu. I know. They don't get the top prize. You know, they get in the ring, but not in the top prize. It sucks. But he has written and directed this show for the screen, 8 episodes. And it is starring Cate Blanchett. We love her. She's amazing. Kevin Kline, still acting, by the way. The man Kevin Kline, love him.
He's old.
He's old. He is old, and you can definitely notice in the show, but he's still got it. And then Sacha Baron Cohen in a completely serious role, No comedy, no satire whatsoever, just doing a serious thing. So the whole thing is like a powerhouse cast, and it's basically about this, Kevin Kline plays this widower who finds this manuscript that his wife wrote before he died that reveals, it's like a book, but it actually is based on something that happened where Cate Blanchett's character has done something terrible in the past that affected their family, and he exposes her by publishing this book, and that's the premise, and it is really good. And yeah, disclaimer. So both shows, disclaimer, well worth your time.
I'm going to check that out because I definitely like Cuarón.
Yeah,
Cuarón. So, and it's a series?
It's a series, 8 episodes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But is it over at the end of the 8?
Yes. Yeah. Limited series, right?
It doesn't linger on, does it?
Yeah, no. Whenever you get actors of that caliber, they're not going to stick around for 3 seasons. It's not happening.
They're like, will you stick around? We've got donuts. They're right? Like, no, I'm going to leave now.
Absolutely. I've got 6 movies to do.
Warm up the Lambo. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it.
All right. Well, Tim, here we go. We should talk about the movie we're going to be talking about, which is Anora. That is our film discussion for today. And I purposely chose it because I wanted, we had some, you know, limited time around the holidays, and it's just always a busy time. I didn't want to force us both to go to a theater at that exact time. So I wanted something that was available on streaming. So we don't really have a theater experience. We usually talk about that, but we do have a streaming experience. So Anora, yeah, it was but up for 5 Golden Globe nominations. It's going to be up for at least that many Oscars, if not more. So that's why I chose it. And we streamed it. What was your streaming experience like, Tim?
Well, John, you purchased it, and then I decided I forgot my Prime code, so I'm not going to undo it. Uh-huh. I don't know if you've ever had this. John was trying to share the movie with me.
I was trying to share it because I didn't want you to have to fork out $20. It was only available to buy, unfortunately.
But then I can't remember my Prime login information, and okay. I was like, do I want to save $20? Or do I want to not have to remember my Prime stuff? And I got lazy and I just bought it.
You bought it.
I'm so glad that I did because it is a great movie.
Well worth owning for sure.
Yeah. So I'm like, what did I buy the last time for $25? Mm-hmm. Some awful movie. Yeah. Right. That I'll never watch again. What was it?
Joker 2, was it? I think I'm pretty sure
it was Joker. Yeah. I don't even know what to do there. Like, it's very sad. Like,
can I just delete it? Can I just get rid of it?
Can I give it back? Yeah. Could I donate this to someone, get a write-off? I don't know.
By the way, Dan Baker, I gotta shout him out every time, was very upset at your critique of Joker 2 because we saw it together and we both did really like it. And I think I've caved a little bit too much on that movie because I really do stand by it more than you. But anyway, Dan was very sad that you didn't like it. And he said, you know, you didn't. He felt like your critiques weren't well justified. So I'm just passing on. I'm just the messenger.
So he accused me of manipulating you and having a poorly justified rationale for my feelings about the movie.
I think that was the gist of it. Yeah. Sad.
Jeez. John, do you have dueling pistols by any chance, John?
Oh, no. Yes. It just backs to each other.
I am asking for a friend. 10 paces. I'm asking. Yeah, I need to get my slapping glove out.
Speaking of Lin-Manuel Miranda, right?
Yeah, right. I need to get my slapping glove out and challenge Dan. I feel like Dan could beat me in like basically any form of combat. He's a very big in shape kind of guy.
Yeah.
And he's technically proficient in basically everything. So if I'm going to duel him, I better really... Yeah, I'm thinking, John, you give me the dueling pistols and I'll make sure one of them's not loaded.
Okay.
And that's my only chance with Dan. But I think Dan, if he wants to drive down here, he's welcome to drive down here and tell it to my face.
Oof. Whoa. Them fighting words. Yeah, I'm just passing on. But hey, I love Dan and we had breakfast recently together and he's a good guy.
He's a good guy. He's just got terrible opinions about Joker. But you know Ouch. What? We all have our shortcomings and our character right. flaws. Yeah. Yep. And that's okay, Dan. I love you, man. I love you still. If you do want a duel, I am here. You could pick a different weapon if you want, but it has to be something that I can mess with prior.
And we'll film it. We'll put it up on the website. It'll be great.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm banking that Dan's not going to drive down to try to kill me.
Probably not. It's not his style, you know?
He'll probably get me like at some later date, you know?
When you least expect it.
I remember what you said about Joker, Tim. And he'll come down here.
That's right.
Oh, man. I'm kind of scared now, John.
All right. Well, did you watch it by yourself? Was it just like a Saturday night sort of?
I watched it during the day. And so I turn it on. Okay. I have no idea what it's about. I've been really into the cold view, right? Go in.
Yeah.
I'm like, Anora, oh, that sounds nice. Oh, and the first scene, I'm like, my God, it's like a strip club.
It was.
And I'm like, oh, okay. Another one of these movies, huh? Okay. Yeah. This is going to be like, what's the other one with all the sex in it that we reviewed?
I know. It's like every December we review one with so much sex. It was the one with the guy. I know what you're saying, though, with that big elephant and I've totally forgot the name.
It's okay. We're struggling to remember things as we get older. Each year, we lose more memory. But anyway, so I'm like, oh my gosh, what are we watching here? But by the first scene, the movie had my heart. So yeah, I watched it in my living room during the day.
Nice day watch. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just pretty mellow. I looked around. There was one theater that had it. I just couldn't make the time.
Oh,
it would
okay.
be great in the theater.
That would have been nice to go check it out. It wasn't anything. It wasn't playing by me at all. But yeah, so for me, I fired it up on a Sunday night, sacrificed this the Lions and Vikings football game that I did actually really want to watch. But I decided, you know, I'm just going to go for the movie at that point. And then I made myself some tacos and had some ice cream waiting in the wings. You know, it was a whole thing. And I was excited when I pressed play because I knew the hype surrounding it was good, and I just felt like it was going to be good. And it's so nice pressing play on a movie that you know is going to be just and it's going to take you to another world and a good experience. So yeah, it was great. And plus, also, I'm grateful for the shorter streaming windows. I'm just going to say it, all right? Because like even like 4 or 5 years ago, Tim, like you had to if you wanted to watch these Oscar movies before the Oscars, you had to go to the theater like 20 times. There was no option to just play it on your TV. You were just like, oh, I'm gonna go to the theater all the time for 2 months and spend a bazillion dollars. So I'm grateful for that.
I think the time is what I like. I feel like I get time back when we do a stream.
Yeah.
Because like with the movies, like, and I always complain about this, like you go to a theater, a lot of times it doesn't start when it says it's going to.
Right. 40 minutes of previews. Yeah.
Yeah. And which is fun, but not that fun. And especially if we're, you know, a working dads like we are, you got to, you got to budget your time a little bit.
I know. We will get to the theater next month, but it's nice to have some streaming in the middle of it. So yeah, there you go. All right, let's talk about the plot for those of us who are not familiar out there with Anora. So uh-oh. I know.
Are you going to do it this time?
Yeah, I'm going to do it because we take turns, Tim. We were taught that as children, and it's how we do it around here.
I'm excited to hear your summasis.
All right. So, as Tim mentioned, this isn't a movie for everyone. You'll know that within the first 30 seconds. It is definitely a lot of sexual content, a lot of nudity. But there is a purpose behind it because this movie is about a sex worker and she is a stripper and also on the side does some escort services. And so when we meet her, she is doing her thing and then she comes across this young kid named Vanya, who's like probably like early 20s, something like that. And he is just, you know, got the ball of energy and just is throwing money at everybody. This is clearly just got like tons of money to burn. And he speaks English, but like definitely has this, is Russian by trade and has a thick Russian accent. And so anyway, he hires her to be his girlfriend for like a week, you know, paying her, of course. And then during that week, they party and invite friends over and do all kinds of crazy stuff. Then they have spontaneously fly to Vegas, you know, and he's just throwing money at everything. And then he asks her spontaneously to marry her. And she, you know, is hesitant and thinks he's joking, but he seems very sincere about it. And he was like, and it'll help me get a green card and then I can like stay in America and my parents will get off my back. And we also learn over the course of that week that his parents are definitely like famous, like not famous in the sense of actors, but famous, like they're like oligarchs. They're like notorious, I guess would be the best word for it.
Notorious. Go ahead.
Yes. Notorious. And so that's where he's getting his money. He's basically using daddy's credit card and live in just going around the world, bouncing around from the next high to the next high. So they get married. And that is when the movie takes a turn, because then we shift from this sort of Cinderella story of this, you know, escort you know, pretty woman type thing, meeting this rich person and then living happily ever after, to the oligarch's parents finding out about this marriage, not liking it whatsoever, and then sending in the goon squad to come and annul this thing and fix it. And that is what the movie then turns into. We get these three soldier guys coming over to track down Vanya and Annie. Nora is her name, but she goes by Annie. And then they want to annul the marriage, and that, and then takes up the rest of the movie. And that's all I'll say for now. Did I leave anything out? How are we doing?
Oh, I think you did such a great job.
Oh, thank you,
John. I don't know. I just wanted to compliment you on your summary.
No, I appreciate
that. It was brief yet complete. Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like I've got a sense of the film. I don't even need to see it anymore. Thank you.
Well, yeah. And so Annie's very shocked. You know, she thinks she's suddenly reconsidering like what she's gotten herself into, because she realizes that this family that she's now married into does not like her, does not want her, and is ready to ditch her at the nearest curb. So, yeah, that's the movie. And we'll get into it more beyond that.
So she brings dishonor on the family.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big deal. All right, let's talk about acting. Now, one thing about this movie that's interesting is that it features zero movie stars. There's no Julia Roberts here, and there's no one that you would recognize from anything.
Mark Hamill? Mark Hamill?
Mark Hamill is not in this one. It's sad.
Oh,
I wish,
man,
he was.
Yeah, me too. He'd be great.
He'd be so great. No, so it's kind of nice, though, because then you get actually just a bunch of characters. You don't know these people from anything else. You have no context, and you just get to enjoy actual characters, which is really nice. So, and it becomes a star-making churn for some of these people, too. So, beginning with Mikey Madison, who is the, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. We always talk about pronunciations. Mickey Madison, girl's name. That might be it. Mikey, shoot, I really should have looked that up. By the way, speaking of pronunciations, Ralph Fiennes, remember we were talking about this last time? I figured it out, Tim.
Yes.
It's not that it's Ray Fiennes, it's that his last name starts with an F, and it's actually Ralph is his first name, Ralph. So you think Ralph,
not Ralph.
Ralph, and then when you run it together with Fiennes, then it sounds like Ray Fiennes. You know what I'm saying?
Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah. I wanted to clear that up because we spent some time
Ralph
on it last
Fiennes.
Time. Ralph
Fiennes. Oh, gosh. Fiennes. That's super helpful to me, actually. It's because his name elides.
Yes.
With the first and last name come together into a Fiennes.
You got it. So it makes a little more sense than Ralph going to Ray, which really doesn't make any sense.
We could just put a big, long, pregnant pause in the middle and be like, Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah. About 1 to 2 seconds. That's all you need. Anyway, so maybe it's Mickey Madison, Mikey. I don't know. Let's just refer to her by her last name from now on, and we'll stop the nonsense. So anyway, this is her big screen debut, and she's the lead of the film. And so, Tim, what do you think this up-and-coming actress brought to the table today in this film?
Everything. She's fantastic. The best part about it is I didn't think about her not being a movie star at all.
Exactly.
I didn't think, oh, this actress sucks. Like, because a lot of times you get these, like, terrible actors because that's what they can afford for these films.
Yeah,
no way. She was great. She's
so good.
Yeah, she brings it all. I believed her character. Like, I deeply believed that she was a, you know, New York / New Jersey kid with a Hard Knocks background,
right? Gritty, street smarts, you know. Yeah,
yeah. And they had little things that they did to like build like who she was. So like they had her living in a duplex that had two different roofs because each person owned one half of the roof. All these things were like, and her, she had the old roof and the next door neighbor had the new roof.
Dude, I didn't even notice that. What a great detail. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they were really, it was just, yeah, I was very impressed with how they built it up. It seemed like they had knowledge of who the character was and they wrote this character. And I know I'm talking about the actress, but the actress did a great job. And then, yeah, everything kind of, she really built this believable, deeply believable character. So she wasn't like, I'm a down on, it's you're down on the luck sex worker. Like, that's not what it was. It was like, no, she's a human being and she's got goals and aspirations and yeah.
And she's learned to work with what she's got, you know? I mean, she's, mm-hmm. yeah, she's survived off her body. She's survived off her wits. Got a foul mouth, you know? She'll throw a punch if she needs to. It's that kind of a woman.
She's tough.
Yeah.
Like, she's gritty. She's tough. She's a survivor. And the character drew us into, like, where we didn't have to go, oh, she's, we didn't have to question her morality in any way. Mm-hmm. I felt like we were just like, oh, she's just trying to get by.
It's just her. Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's just who she is. So I thought that was acted well. And the actress was able to put a young person's spin on it. So she's still like, even though she is a sex worker, she's still like a young person who's excited about things and wants to experience life. And so I thought that was a good spin.
Yeah. And she's positive. You're right. Like they could have gone that down on your luck, like route, but like, she actually is like full of hope and ambition and despite her circumstances. So yeah, totally. Great character, great performance. She's going to be nominated for an Oscar, and it's much deserved. And she's going to be a clear contender to win. So, yeah. Awesome. And then, as Vanya, her boyfriend slash, or well, client turned husband, this is played by another no-name, someone named Mark Edelstein. Yeah, so he's like, I thought he was great, too, because you got this, like, rich kid. I liked his sort of... You know, speaking of the Enneagram, this would be like your classic Enneagram 7, who's just constantly like, the next fun thing, then the next fun thing, the next fun thing. But then when you actually face any sort of real life, any real emotions, they just run or they freeze up. They just can't handle it. So that's this kid. He's just like, he's great as long as he's got the next drugs lined up and the next sex. But then when the movie turns and his parents are like all in his face, he turns into something completely different. And that's where I think we see some great acting from him, because he's genuinely scared of his parents. And he also is a coward and does not and will not stand up to them. Yeah.
Yeah. But you also see he's trapped in certain ways too.
Hmm.
So I wasn't without empathy for him. I mean, he's basically been created to be a pawn. And
right.
So when he acts like a pawn, I don't have a whole lot of like, I don't blame him for that very much. I mean, when he makes kind of cowardly decisions, I'm like, oh, that's how he was raised, to basically defer to his parents.
Yeah, that's interesting, because you're right. In some ways, the way that his parents treat Annie is somewhat similar to how they treat him. There's just like everything to them is just chess pieces on the board. Like it's all about them and their moves and everything, instead of treating them like people.
Yeah, I like the character development, because you see at first he seems to have power and she has none. So it's like the Pretty Woman, you know, we talk about Pretty Woman, that's like a Cinderella tale kind of, with a lack of character development. But this is like the power changes in this movie. She is considered the person that has no moral compass by the parents, but in reality they've created a monster, and then this kid has very little moral compass. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting juxtaposition. So I thought it was cool how they did that.
You're totally right. And how he goes from having all the power in the beginning to then just like, when he's like sitting in the face of his parents, you couldn't be more powerless. He just looks so pathetic. Right, exactly.
Yeah. And then she's willing to like fight all the time. So she'll fight the goons. She'll fight the most powerful oligarchs.
Yeah.
She'll get right in their face and be like, nope, this isn't happening. And she does everything. I mean, I'm just very, and then he's not willing to do anything. Mm-mm. So it was really interesting, and she'll stand up for what's right all the time.
I know, and she wants so badly for him to stand up, and she tries, but yeah, but you're right. I think that's interesting. I didn't really think about that, but now that you mention it, it is so helpful that he also is, in some ways, a perpetrator, but also a victim of being treated as less than human as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like, oh, we think of him as being this powerful kid that has the world at his, doorstep, but he's not at all. Like, he's completely subject to people who have abused him but in a different kind of way. Yeah. So yeah, interesting. And then I like you see toward the end of the film that she gets respect from the dad, actually.
Yeah.
Like the head oligarch guy. Yeah. And she's unwilling to like be bought. So she takes the sable coat, which is like, I don't know, $100,000 or something, and just throws it. She's like, take this too. Cause they're treating her like a horse. So she like gets, she's like, fine. She's like, I don't need your stuff. Here, take this designer scarf. Take this. I don't need this. Yeah.
Powerful.
And then she gets respect. Like, the dad laughs. Like when she's like making fun of his son, he's like, thinks it's hilarious.
That was a great scene. Yeah.
I know. I love the script of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the screenplay is amazing.
It is. So then I want to talk about the three minor characters that I think actually are so interesting because they could have just been throwaway characters, but they become like the heart and soul of this movie. You have I called them the goons, but like basically they're the soldiers that are sent by the oligarch family to go fix this mess, mm-hmm. right? So you start off with this Tauros guy, who I loved. We see him and he's in the middle of what, like a baptism, but like what do you call it when your baby is being
christening?
Yeah, he's performing the ceremony, and then he gets that text that made me laugh out loud. Remember, he gets that text, he like goes under his robes, and he's like, oh,
he leaves mid christening.
He does, in the middle of this ceremony,
uh-huh,
to go do the bidding of these oligarchs, because he also is bought and paid for and is subject to them. And so yeah, he leaves this religious ceremony, goes, and then he organizes these other two guys to be kind of like the soldiers. And so you have this sort of like gentle giant guy named Garnick, which I liked him because he's just like kind of, you know, he wants to come in and be like, okay, we're going to figure this all out. But then Annie's having none of it, and she totally destroys him. And he... she kicks him and he flies into this coffee table. And it's actually really sad, but it's so funny because for the rest of the movie, he needs to go to the hospital so bad. He's got a broken nose, definitely a concussion, but he's forced to just march all over town on this crazy wild goose chase as they're searching for Vanya. It's so funny.
So there's a little Keystone Cop about the goons. They're kind of like not very competent.
Right.
And they're always trying to strong arm their way into finding Vanya.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're taking, like, sometimes the path of most resistance.
Yeah.
You're like, why are you doing it this way? But yeah, they're pretty funny. So they're kind of like comic relief almost.
Yeah, I heard someone online say it kind of turns into a bit of a screwball comedy. That's not far off.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. A little bit of a dark comedy, but yeah. And I should say, we keep mentioning they're searching for Vanya. One point I should say is when the soldiers come to sort of like, you know, annul the marriage and fix this, Vanya just takes off. And so most of the movie is them kind of searching, where did he go? And he just totally leaves and abandons Annie. And so they spend a lot of the movie searching around town for him. So that's what we mean by that. And then finally, you have Igor. Igor is sort of like begins by, like, you think he's just sort of, you know, especially with that name, he's sort of your typical muscle guy who's going to do the dirty work. But he ends up becoming one of the biggest grace notes of the movie, which we'll get to towards the mm-hmm. end. So yeah, so I love those side characters, and I think the whole cast is great because there really isn't like every single character in this movie is interesting. They're all played by no-name actors who totally kill it, and it's just a really great ensemble.
I think the mom, like the mother-in-law or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I think she is great.
Fierce, man.
Yeah. She's a fun character. I like that quite a bit. But I think, yeah, all these actors are great. Like, I think they nailed it. I can't think of anybody that's distracting in this film.
I know. It's like, where did they come from? How did you find these awesome people? They're great. All right. Let's talk about the man behind all this, writer and director Sean Baker. So Sean Baker comes out with a movie like every few years, and it feels like every time he does, it's like a big deal. His big last one was The Florida Project. That was in 2017, and that got Willem Dafoe a Oscar nomination. Did you ever see The Florida Project?
Yes.
You did?
I think I did. Can you give me the summary of The Florida Project?
Yeah. So it's like Willem Dafoe owns this hotel, and it's in Florida.
Seen it. Yes. All right, we're good. And it's okay. Like a woman who, is she like a stripper too?
Yeah, exactly. Same thing. Yeah.
And then she has a little girl, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's seen through the eyes of this little girl. And it's in the backdrop of Walt Disney World, and they're staying at this ramshackle hotel owned by Willem Dafoe. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. And he keeps it up. He's like a good landlord kind of guy. Okay. I saw this, love this movie. It was emotionally powerful.
Yeah.
Just
definitely.
Like, just like what we just watched. Yeah. So he's fascinated with these like vulnerable people.
That's it. He is. All of his movies deal with marginalized people and especially sex workers. And he just has a heart for them. And really, that's the best way to say it, because it's not exploiting them. It's not being salacious. It's literally like he's treating them like genuine people just trying to get by, because these are real people that that mm-hmm. are among us. Exactly.
That's interesting. I'm so glad that you mentioned that because I didn't do any like background on this, but there's some character overlap here.
Yeah, definitely. And I just think what I love about him as a writer and a director is just that, how character-driven his movies are. I love those kind of movies the best. Like, plot-driven movies are great. You know, I'll go see a Mission Impossible movie about, you know, some whatever, submarines taking over the world. It's all good. But, like, it's also great when you just have beautiful characters that is the plot. That moves it forward. And I also love how the movie is constructed. That's where I think he really shines as both writer and director here, because I love how you begin with this sort of very flashy first 30-40 minutes, you know, where it's like they're just going all around town and doing all these fun things, and she's like, you think she's going to live happily ever after, and then the way it shifts totally in tone, and then towards the end how you get these really subtle beautiful scenes that bring it all together. Just think it's really well written and directed.
Yeah. I never would have guessed that a cocaine fueled bench would have ended in disaster. I know.
You're right. We should have seen it coming.
And they had taken all the precautions of hiring a sex worker for a week.
For a week, yeah. How is that not going to end well? That's what I was thinking, Tim.
I know. I was like, this is like Ozzie and Harriet kind of stuff. This is like the American dream happening right here.
Right.
But then it all fell apart. I just can't imagine why.
Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we love his work, clearly. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so good. It's emotional character development and good plots.
Yeah. It twists and turns in entertaining, exciting ways, but also with actual resonance. So, yeah. Sean Baker. Every time he makes a movie, it's a big deal.
Do you know any other of the movies? I don't know any other Sean Baker
movies. No, unfortunately, I've not seen any of his other movies. So, that's, okay. Yeah. It's just the Florida Project in this one. But
wow, this makes me want to go back and check out the catalog. I like that there was elements of funny in this one, which mm-hmm. I think he did really well.
Yep. Genuinely, like laugh out loud funny. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Just hilarious. Like, because I think I gave the characters Soprano vibes or like Goodfellow vibes in the beginning. So mm-hmm. he played with that, I think. So we're like, oh, they're going to just be a one-dimensional tough guys that are like ruthless, and this girl doesn't know what she's getting into. And it turns out that's not the case at all. Like, they're kind of buffoons.
Yeah.
They're tough guys, but they're buffoons too.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That poor guy. He's just like, his nose is bleeding. He's throwing up in the car, and they're just like, suck
it up.
He's
making absolutely no sense at all. Yeah.
Oh, man. It's great. All right. Let's dive into some themes. So, you know, it does feel like around December every year we review this like controversial movie with lots of sex in it. And I think there are some people maybe on the more conservative end of the spectrum that might ask us, why on earth are two Christians on a Christian podcast reviewing a movie like this? And I think my biggest pushback to it would be that, who are the characters Jesus highlighted as he walked the earth? What are the characters that we see in the Gospels? One of them is a prostitute. More than one, actually. And I feel like we just sort of gloss over that in scripture to our detriment. Like, right, we turn everything into kind of a kid's flannel graph, and we don't really actually see that, like, what would be the day-to-day life of this prostitute that suddenly shows up in the Gospels and meets Jesus? What would that look like if we made a movie about her? Probably something like this.
Yeah, I think that's true. I also think that, like, my other thought on that would be, if you watch this film and your take on it is that it's glorifying being a prostitute or a sex worker,
yeah,
you've like really, you're like out of touch.
Totally. Like, you've missed
like
it.
That is, yeah, you've missed it. Yeah, 100%. And that the reason somebody's doing this is because it's their best option a lot of times. Mm-hmm. That's not always the case. It's like situational, right? Just like the situation of this kid is he has incredible wealth, Vanya. The situation of Annie is that she has to do all these things in order to survive.
That's right.
So it's just too, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It's not like it always is that way. And I think, you know, we could debate the morality of like, if there's just a person who wants to feel empowered and exchange sex for money, is that right? Is that wrong? We could talk about that another time. But like in a lot of cases, it really is that they're just doing what they have available to them because they don't have a lot of other options. So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that Sean Baker consistently chooses to highlight them, like these marginalized people, just like the Gospels, because, and I think we're in danger of like becoming Pharisees if we write off those stories, because these people matter. They matter to God. They're real people, like I said, among us. They're our neighbors, and they matter. And we can't just, as Christians, put our fingers in our ears and pretend like certain people don't exist.
Yeah.
And when you look at the other characters in the movie, you see sort of the polar opposite, right? You see what it looks to be steeped in money and power and how that corrupts, right? Obviously, Vanya's parents fall in that category, just completely disconnected from reality. I would even say Toros, to an extent, is an interesting character because I think it's such a startling symbolism how we see him in a religious ceremony and then leaving that to go do the bidding of these corrupt, powerful, you know, awful people. And you know, it's kind of a visual image of sort of sacrificing your soul for money, protection, power, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's like to me the act of like where you like see who this person is.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, he's so afraid throughout the entire movie. He's like just full of anxiety and fear.
Yes.
And he's so afraid to like let down the oligarchs that he's willing to like leave a baptism, which he's the officiant.
Right. Yes.
You're like, what?
And then the way that he enters all the spaces, right? Like he mm-hmm. acts like he'll just walk into a restaurant, right into the kitchen. He'll be like, "Sir, where you're not supposed to be back." And he's just like, you know, brushes them off like flies. He'll go to like this karaoke party or whatever, take over the microphone. Have you seen this boy? Have you seen him?
He's always lecturing people. Like I love that he lectures the young people. He's like, "You young people have no work ethic. You have no drive. You're terrible."
Yeah.
They're just like, what? Who are you?
Totally. His car gets towed and he's just drives it off the thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Right. So I feel like it's funny, but there's also kind of, when you peel back the layers, it's kind of disturbing too, because it sort of shows you what people will do to bow to power. And I think that has some relevance in our modern day age. If you're, you know, I think as Christians, we're supposed to have a heart for the outsider, for the marginalized, for the people on the outside of society. And instead, I think too often we are aligning ourselves with power and we are sacrificing our very soul to do that.
So what's interesting is the parallel. This guy loves parallelism. Did he write the script too?
He did, yes.
Okay, so he loves this parallelism because Toros, is that his name, Toros?
Toros, yeah.
He really is the prostitute in this movie.
Oh boy, that's a good point.
Like he is the one that's willing to do anything for this other person, no matter what it costs and no matter what moral repercussions there are.
Yes.
Like he's willing to sell out anything and anybody just to basically keep his position. And so like it's funny because he's works off the anxiety of that. So in a lot of ways, like he's very like, you look at him and you're like, oh, he's the one that's like totally subject to someone else and is sold out to this person. It's not Annie.
As compared to Annie, who's the real prostitute in the movie, and she's fighting for what's right and her dignity, right? How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so succumbing to power, it's a temptation. I think it can trap us all.
Yeah.
I think the two most powerful scenes of the movie come at the end, and I want to highlight them. So first you have that scene where Igor is and Annie are talking and they're in the suite together. And it's so interesting because Igor has like been the one person that, even though he comes across at the beginning as kind of like this brutish sort of guy, especially with that name, he's been the one person that has treated Annie as an actual person, like with dignity. There is really, I can't think of any other character that really has. Everyone else is treating her like a nuisance, you know, like a problem to solve. He actually looks at her and sees a person. He offers her his scarf when she's cold. In that one scene at the court where he asked them to apologize, like someone should apologize to her, right? In front of the oligarchs.
Yeah, I thought that was powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also like the scene where she finds out that it was his birthday that whole day.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he's like, what does your name mean? She's like, I don't know. And he's like, well, here's what your name means.
Well, that's what's powerful, right? Because she kind of mocks his name, Igor, but he says, I'm proud of my name. It means warrior. And I thought that was beautiful because he has been a warrior in the movie, mm-hmm. but not in like the traditional sense, you know, like in the way we've seen these other characters be warriors, quote unquote. He's been like a warrior for her dignity and what's right. And then, yeah, he reveals what her name means, which is it's like bright or light or maybe grace or something like that.
So it's like Anora. Yeah, that's true. So it's like honor is part of that name, like Anora. So it's with honor.
Wow.
So basically her name means like honorable or a person of honor. But she goes by Annie. Then he like kind of restores her name. And he's like, no, you're like light and honor.
That's beautiful. And she says, you know, in America, what names don't mean anything to us, you know, and that's true. And I think that, but names mean a big deal in scripture. And I think it should mean more to us. And it's a really beautiful scene.
So I love that scene. And then the final scene.
Yes, the final scene.
That, I was weeping at the final scene. Oh my gosh. Like it got me.
Totally. So the final scene, obviously, spoiler alert, they're in the car and he's dropping her off and he reveals.
Watch the film. Hold on a sec. Hold on a sec. Watch the film. Don't listen. Like it's so good that if you listen right now to us and you haven't watched the film, you will get cheated out of this film. So I'm sorry, John. I think it's that good. All right, go ahead, John.
That's always our blanket recommendation. Watch the film before you hear us talk about it. We just be a discussion with you, not if you haven't seen it. But yes, so the final scene, he's dropping her off and he reveals that he has kept her 4-carat diamond ring that Vanya impulsively got for her, which is worth what? Maybe like 100K? I mean, who knows?
No, it's more than that.
More than that?
Several million, I think.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of money, right? And mm-hmm. so she was going to like live happily ever after with this rich guy or whatever. And then, of course, now she's basically kicked to the curb. Well, here's her chance to actually have some security in her life like she was hoping for. And she responds in the way that she's accustomed to responding when someone is kind to her and offers her money, and that is to offer her body and sex. And so she does that without even asking. She's just like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. Everything is transactional in her world. And so she starts having sex with him. And then for the first time, we see a person treating her during sex as a person. Like he actually looks in her eyes. He holds her face. How did Vanya have sex with her? From behind, very quickly, right? It's all about his gratification. He looks at her and treats her like a person. And at first, she's repulsed by it. Like that act of intimacy actually makes her like physically upset. She slaps him. And then it like breaks down that exterior, that hard exterior she's crafted over the years. And she starts weeping in his arms.
So she's like looking at this as like a transactional thing where he got the ring back. She's trying to love him, but she can't. Like she has, it's like not in her to like be vulnerable enough to love like that. So she begins to make love to him, like facing him. And then he goes to kiss her. And it's so much intimacy that she can't take it. She can't take the connection and the intimacy and the like love of that. Cause you know, she's a prostitute rule. She doesn't kiss people. She doesn't get emotionally involved. So she's willing to have sex with him, but she can't reach that level of like where she can kiss him and like be connected to him.
Yeah.
And then she weeps. Cause she realizes like, oh, I've become so hard that like, I can't, I've lost some part of my humanity and that somebody who I want to connect with, I can't even connect with. And so she weeps. Anyway, I'm reading into it.
No, absolutely. That's what it is. And that's where the movie ends. Cue the credits. And that is, mm-hmm. and that in and of itself is saying, it is the giving you the heart of the movie. It's like that is the redemption of everything, is that scene. And it's such a powerful, brilliant way to end a movie.
Yeah. It blew my mind. I was like, oh my gosh, this is the best movie I've seen this year.
Yep. You texted me and said that. I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
I stand behind it. I really think it's the best film I've seen this year.
Great ending, great movie. And yeah, I know. It's just awesome. So Tim, I guess that's it. What are your final thoughts on Anora and your letter grade?
Well, so I think it's a great, great film. I think it will be in the best picture category. The acting is good. I like the cinematography. photography, even. I love it that it's all in the winter.
Yeah.
Everything about it is just captivating. It's even got humor. And so I think it's got like all these elements, and I'm not seeing any problem with this film at all. I give it a solid A, and it's the best film I've seen this year.
I agree. I really enjoyed it. I think, like you said, it's got everything. It's funny. It's entertaining. Legitimately, it's sad. It's powerful. It's beautiful. It's got literally all the feels. And yeah, I would give it an A as well. Yeah, there are some movies that I personally preferred more than it, but like I think it's hard to find a flaw with this film. It's going to be up for everything and has a good shot at winning. I know a lot, you know, it didn't get anything in the Golden Globes, which was kind of surprising. It surprised a lot of people that it didn't win any Golden Globes, but that's the Hollywood Foreign Press. It's like so, always so weird. But when you get to the Oscars, then you're dealing with the actual Hollywood peers, and I think they're going to lavish attention on this film.
I liked it. It was cerebral and emotional. Like, that to me is like really hard to do because it's got high concepts that are being translated via human relationships, and I don't think that's easy to accomplish. So I think I agree, man. I think that we'll see. I think this could be a surprise.
Yeah. It's so hard to do a movie like this well. You're right. It's such a tricky balance because you could fall on either end of the spectrum. It could be gratuitous. It could be sensational. It could be it's a deft act of like fine writing, and he nails it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love it, man.
All right. Well, the movie is Anora. It's streaming at a TV screen near you. You do currently have to pay $20, but I guarantee this will be on one of the streaming services in like a month. So if you're a cheapskate and you want to wait, go ahead and wait, but watch the movie at some point. If you are okay with the content, watch the movie.
It's a great film. I mean, like $20 is like less than two tickets. So if you're watching with a buddy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever. Like, this is a great, I mean, it's well worth it.
Well, I mean, absolutely. If you think about a theater, you're going to pay $13 for one ticket plus popcorn. You're at $20. I mean, just get the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can eat your own food. And some of it's better than theater food. So there you go.
No slushy, though. Sorry, Tim.
Yeah, I know.
All right, Tim. Well, we know what we're watching next. So it's going to be our very last movie of 2024. It is The Brutalist. We will have to make it out to the theater. And Tim, it is 3 hours and 30 minutes long. There is a 15.
Good Lord.
There is a 15-minute intermission. It's going to be great. This movie won Best Drama, Golden Globe for Best Drama. It is going to be up for everything. It is the one we've been talking about for months. I'm very excited to see it and talk about it. So we got to do it. We got to make the journey.
John, I'm willing to go on this journey with you, even though you were unwilling to stay awake for Lawrence of Arabia.
Whatever. You're the one who fell asleep. I was wide awake.
But I'd seen it before. You'd never seen it.
I know.
Did I kick you out? I'm like, just go home, John.
When I come this summer, we got to finish the movie.
Okay, we're going to finish Lawrence of Arabia. And for all you guys that haven't seen it, like John's only seen part of it, this is your homework. You need to watch Steven Spielberg's favorite film.
Yeah, it is. It's his favorite film. We probably need to watch. That was like 4 years ago, Tim, or maybe five. We should watch the first half again, but maybe we should split it up into two nights because it is a long one.
I would like to see it in a large format in a theater.
Oh, that'd be great.
What's that format that Tarantino uses?
The something 70 millimeter. Millimeter.
Yeah. I'd like to see it. I think it's shot in 70, isn't it?
I don't know. Well, but The Brutalist is in 70 millimeter and you can watch it. Now, I've had some friends who are like, we should go to the Oriental and see this in 70 millimeter. But the thing is, Tim, I'm really leery to do that because the one problem with the Oriental, there's no stadium seating. And so you can be cramped next to a bunch of people and there could be a tall person in front of you. Do I want to spend 3 hours and 30 minutes like that? Or do I want the comfort of a big plushy armchair at Marcus? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's one of those. And the sound, too. I know Oriental's got okay sound, but these other ones are designed for sound.
I know.
Just really depends. The popcorn at the Oriental is fantastic.
It is. So I'm probably going to go the Marcus route, but it is playing in 70 at certain locations. I hope you can find it, Tim, and it'll be coming out in a couple weeks. So keep an eye out for showtimes, and we will talk about it in February.
I'm really excited. This is going to be great.
Awesome. Until then, keep the faith, my friends. We will see you next time.